All right. Welcome to another episode of the Beer Opinions Podcast. I am Pat Berger of Patty Long's and Kaiser Tiger, and with me, as always, is Bruce White from the Chicagoland Beer Tours. Bruce, how you doing?
Oh, man, doing excellent. Great to be back. I was actually here at Kaiser last night doing a little beer tasting class for a corporate group here, and you guys just have such a great space, and it's awesome. So thank you.
Yeah, you did text me a picture of our menu that concerned our band topic of Northeast IPAs. apparently one snuck on tap.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I drew a smiley face, I believe, and definitely had one to support the menu choice.
Let's not talk about it. Band subject.
Band. But yeah, no, it's
can't beat them, join them, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Right. Just got to give the people what they want.
Got to get it. Got to do it.
It's that simple.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, we are joined this post Super Bowl weekend with an esteemed guest from Chicago. His brewery is Lake Effect Brewery. It's Clint Baus.
All right.
Did I get your last name right?
Clint? You did. You're good. Yeah.
Awesome. Because usually I don't.
Yeah. On the eve of the snowstorm, I thought this was a perfect, Lake Effect. I love that name. Snowstorm's supposed to hit tonight, so.
Yeah. I've been getting a lot of orders for our snow beer, and so I'm just trying to deliver everything today before the storm hit. So,
well, thanks for sitting down with us, taking some time out of your busy schedule. I have had the pleasure of collaborating with Clint. We made a beer last year that I loved. I thought it was huge success, and we kind of copied it a couple weeks ago, made another one. We had a couple of tweaks, but nothing major, and that is sitting comfortably in the barrel.
Yes.
We got to come up with a name for that one. That's last year.
What did we name it last year?
We named it Chardonnay Barrel Wild Ale. It wasn't very creative. It was more to the point.
How about not a New England IPA? Just kidding.
We'll table that. We'll send that to the focus group. See what they say first. But
yeah,
they just came back. They said no.
Should they tweet you beer names if they hear this?
Yeah. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
We probably won't use any of them, but please do.
Yeah.
Tweet at Patty Longs or at Lake Effect.
Clint at Lake Effect.
Clint at Lake Effect, and give us your suggestions. We might use it. We might not.
Yeah.
We probably won't, but we might. Yeah. You never know.
Yeah. I like it. Crowdsource the names.
Let's get back to Clint here. Clint, I'm a big fan of the brewery, as you know. Give us a little bit of history. When did you start it, and when did you get into beer?
Yeah, well, going back, my introduction to beers was mainly German styles. I had my dad traveled a lot to Europe, and I would tag along, and he had many meetings in Munich, and so I could start a little younger than here drinking, and so I developed a love for Helles style beers, some of the lagers, Weiss beers, and at the time there just wasn't really anything like that here in the States. And I would say in the early 90s we started getting some more variety, and I enjoyed it. I had, I collected a lot of beers, had a huge beer bottle collection at one time that I had to ultimately get rid of, back in the college days. And pretty much that love of beer grew, and I decided to start home brewing and making my own styles, and I did that for a few years, and really enjoyed it.
What business were you in before? When you graduated college? I assume your degree wasn't in brewing.
I have a few degrees. have nothing to do with beer. I have a degree in architecture and urban planning, And prior to that, I was a geography major, which, you know, good luck finding a job as a geographer. I worked as an architect for about 10 years and was homebrewing. And I would say the economic downturn of 2007-2008 got me rethinking about what I wanted to do. I guess that was kind of a wake-up call for me. I wasn't laid off at that time, but a lot of people around me did, and it just, you know, these things happen, but there was sort of an unsettling feeling, like, I'd like to have a little bit more control over what I'm doing, and at some point in my life, I've always wanted to start a business. And so it was really that moment at that time that I decided to start looking into a business plan or a business model. And I didn't want to do architecture because I was a little bit, maybe a little down on it at the time. And home brewing was the second best thing I was at. And I had a lot of passion for it. And I started reading a number of books about some of the pioneering breweries that had started before. I read a book, the Dogfish Head book, and learned about his, Sam's experiences. Brooklyn Brewery had a book out and mm-hmm. learned about them. And getting to understand all that, I was able to get my head around what type of brewery I'd like to ultimately start and maybe how to go about it.
Yeah. It's funny. Yeah, I don't know if you saw that Atlantic article about sort of the success of the craft beer boom. But it did mention it cited the economic downturn as one of the factors that contributed to the boom in breweries, because there was just basically so many talented, creative people out of work looking for something to do. And they all said, well, what do I like? I like beer.
Yeah. That's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd never exactly thought about that before.
The beer tours. I was laid off as an attorney, which led to my taking a job to lead food tours, which is where I got the idea to do beer tours just to get out of the house at the time. So I stupidly
opened right before the economic downturn. Yeah. It was really terrible timing on my part.
I remember that, yeah.
Buy high and sell low, right? Yeah. Listen, I don't know much about business, but that's what I did.
Yeah. Well, people do drink, when time is bad. And,
sure.
And when times are bad and when times are good.
So they do. That's good.
Recession proof. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And strangely, they drank craft beer, which, normally you'd think, cheap beer was going to rule the day during an economic downturn, but some people say that it became an affordable luxury.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could buy the best beer in the world for $10.
Sure.
Or it's not like wine, where the best wine in the world is $1,000 a bottle.
Or even whiskey or some other.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So you could feel luxurious without, breaking the bank.
I like it. I like it.
Sure. I believe it.
Yeah. Now you're kind of one of the, which is just kind of goes to show Chicago's beer scene. You're one of the oldest breweries, right, in the city, technically speaking.
It's a funny thought, but we've been around almost 6 years, and I would place us on the third wave of breweries. At least that's how collectively we kind of feel ourselves to be. The first wave, I guess, is Goose Island, and then there was a second wave with like Metro and Half Acre, and I would say Finch kind of got on the tail end of that, and then a bunch of us started, Pipeworks and Beguile, Spiteful, and ourselves. I think we all got licensed within a few months of each other, and we actually
all super small, right? I mean, you all shared that.
We all had very similar systems. We had this Psycho Brew system, which is like a guy in Michigan that fabricates these sort of brewery stands, and they were like, you know, 3 and 4 barrel systems, and Pipeworks had one, and I think that one floated over to 18th Street at some point. Beguile had one early on, and Spyful, I think, was even smaller than that. And then I think they scaled up a little bit. So we all kind of started out doing the same thing, and we could all kind of talk to each other and see where we are in licensing. And, you know, I got my TTB today. What do I got to do? You know, what's coming next? And, you know, it was a really interesting time. Even some of the other ones that hadn't started right away, you know, there was Alarmist, there was South Loop Brewing, which is now Hot Butcher. You know, there were Unane was also. And we actually all did a tasting, an off-flavor tasting course together, and over at Haymarket, and we all kind of got to know each other, and we're all going. You know, we're still resources, so we're kind of the third wave.
So it was a pretty communal atmosphere, yeah. Huh?
That's really cool. It almost sounds like going to college together, you know, or whatever, like kind of like, and then graduating and staying in touch. Yeah. Like alums. Yeah.
Well, we're all kind of growing up a little bit too. Yeah. You know, folks have tap rooms now, and some people are in other states and have big systems, and, you know, it's interesting to see how all of us grow and what kind of path we're taking. Some have distributors, some are still self-distributing. That was one of the distribution was one of the key things that we had in common.
Yeah, because you were all self-distributing to start.
We still are, and I think Pipeworks and maybe Spiteful too.
I think Spiteful signed on.
Oh, they did. Okay. Well, we all kind of had our vans and we're driving around, dropping off cases and figuring out that whole side of things as well. And I think, you know, the self-distribution really allowed a lot of breweries such as ourselves to exist, because starting out, you know, a lot of us were homebrewing. We're very good homebrewers. In order to really start out, you had to go with a distributor, which meant that you kind of needed to really know the ins and outs of your business. You probably needed to produce a little bit, you know, higher volume. So that allowed a lot of us to start the way we wanted to, and to slowly grow up and mature into the business environment.
Yeah, it's an interesting, you know, I mean, I'm known for railing against, you know, the distributors, and for people that don't know, you know, this world of beer and liquor and wine that we live in is governed by a 3-tiered system in the United States that came about after Prohibition, and it basically separates the producers from the distributors from the retailers. Mm-hmm. So I'm on the third tier. The first tier would be the producer, and the second tier is the distributor. And the idea was to keep them all separate so that there couldn't be consolidation, right? And it failed miserably, didn't it? So, you know, in the end, we ended up with, you know, 2 breweries, basically, you know, Miller and Bud. So it didn't protect us from that. And now that they're kind of loosening up that 3-tiered system to the point where a lot of these breweries do have tap rooms, so they're dabbling in the third tier. Mm-hmm. When they passed that, I don't know how the distributing lobbyists allowed you guys to get that self-distribution law out there. I don't think they realized what effect it was going to have, you know. But suddenly a whole bunch of breweries, and how long ago was that self-distributing law passed?
Well, that happened about a year or two before we opened. And I remember my business plan before that was a very difficult plan, raising a lot of money. And then that law changed, and then that that completely, I had to basically rewrite the whole plan. And but I guess the idea behind it is, you know, let some of the smaller breweries build up, and then once you get to a certain level, then you are proven, or you're large enough really to be taken on, you know, with a distributor and to work that way. So I think, you know, otherwise, you know, you'd have to start as a much bigger operation, and maybe that would steer some smaller breweries away from that model. So you at least have some people that can start small, get a little bit larger, and then once you hit a certain cap, you have to sign on with the distributor. So at least when you sign on with somebody,
right,
you've gotten to a certain level.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, you know, I've always cited that law change as what really blew open the beer scene in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, people have a tough time fathoming that this was really a fairly terrible beer market, and fairly terrible as far as how many breweries we had compared to how many people we had 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at one point we had one production brewery in the whole city, Goose Island.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think now we have 180 something, including the suburbs. I think 100 in the city proper, or
seven. It's around 70 in the city proper.
That's it. Bruce is the numbers man. He knows. That's what he's here for. You know, I really think that law allowed it to happen, you know, because suddenly it became feasible to open a very tiny brewery. Whereas, I mean, a brewery producing, how many barrels a year are you producing, Clint?
Last year we did about 400 barrels.
Right. So to get a distributor on board with that is very difficult for them to just go, you know, 400 barrels is, you know, that's just not enough for us to bother to come and pick it up and sell it and distribute it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of breweries even producing less than that, right? So, I mean, you know, somehow this skirting of the three-tiered system is really, in my opinion, responsible for all these breweries we have now.
Yeah. I mean, it's given people the opportunity to start very small.
Yeah. And that was one of the, I'm just trying to clarify my own understanding. One of the concerns is if you're too small, kind of what you were just saying, the distributors maybe aren't incentivized to give you the tender love and care that you might need, particularly as a newer brewery, when you start to, mm-hmm. you know, develop relationships and get shelf space and develop kind of brand awareness for consumers. Whereas when you're self-distributing, you know, it makes a big difference when you're the person and you're like, try my beer. So I assume that plays a big role in kind of what the benefit of self-distribution is.
It does, but it's also just basic math too, because
sure.
there's a cut that's taken
yep.
once you cross the tier. So if you can deliver it for less than that cut, then, you know, you can be a viable
Got
business.
It. Yep. No, that makes total
so
sense.
So at some
yep.
point you get to I mean, it still costs money to deliver beer. You know, you still have to have a vehicle, and you have to have, you know, the manpower and
your own
insurance
time
and all that.
Yep.
And but you can still do that for fairly cheaply under that. But once you get to more of a complicated distribution network, that's when a distributor would probably be very helpful. But then again, you could become an incredible distributor yourself and have all your vans and everything. So it's it'll be interesting.
That's what Stone did, right?
I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah, they've got a big distributorship in California.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how they legally worked all mm-hmm. of that, but you know, God bless them. You know, I do, you know, rail on distributors a lot, but they do serve a purpose, and mm-hmm. the three-tiered system does serve a purpose, not necessarily the purpose that they tout it to, but you know, it is what's keeping Anheuser-Busch from owning bars all across
exactly.
You know, the country. And but you know, it's you know there's a big controversy now with beer bar owners, especially concerning all these tap rooms. Mm-hmm. So they're going, well, wait a minute, you know, our tier is being oversaturated with the first tier opening, third tier, obviously, establishments, tap rooms and whatnot. I'm not necessarily in that camp, but, you know, it does, it is sort of makes me understand why the distributors are very nervous about the self-distribution, you know. It is actually cutting into their numbers now, I think, and they're realizing that. But, hey, it's too late, right?
<I hope so>.
Probably not in other states. Yeah. We should note that, you know, Illinois is unique in its self-distribution law. There aren't, not every state has that.
There's, yeah, there are a few other states. There,
yeah, that definitely a few others. But, you know, there's, if you're in Mississippi listening to this and wondering why you don't have 180 breweries mm-hmm. in your city, it's, check your distribution laws.
There's probably a lot of other issues.
I'm pretty sure Texas too. Now and then Texas pops up to say,
yeah, so, I know they've had some recent law changes that have opened a few things up for them down there.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that's the way things are going, but, yeah, the three-tier system is probably a whole nother podcast.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
I say that all the time.
Yeah, though. Yeah. But, yeah, and then, you know, it sounds like you, kind of read, there was a great Good Beer Hunting article that you had participated in that I checked out and some other articles. It sounds like you pretty much, because of that change, bootstrapped the brewery as much as you could, raised some friends and family money and that sort of thing. And then the thing that I thought was really interesting was the Greenbush. You got the without the insulation, so you kind of had to change what beers you were going to brew originally. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but
yeah, I mean it's you know you plan for as much as you can, and certain things happen. And the first couple of years of the brewery, I still can't even believe that all that happened. We still use those tanks. Most tanks are, you know, you want to keep a steady fermentation temperature, and they have to be somewhat climate controlled. The way Greenbush, when they started, was they had these single walled tanks that, you basically had to use the ambient temperature outside to kind of control the fermentation. And so they were on wheels, and what they would do is they'd roll it in and out of this big cooler that they had. And so we got these tanks for a song, and we did the same process for a few years. And actually really for about a year. I think that was all we could handle. you know, during the wintertime, no problem, you know. The brewery was 55, 60 degrees inside, you know, and maybe you had to put it in the cooler for overnight, and then you bring it back out, and then it just kind of stays at the temperature you want it. But in the summer, it was kind of challenging. So, we just adapted to that and started doing a lot of saisons mm-hmm. and Belgian-style beers. And ultimately got into some of the wild and sour. So anything that could ferment at much higher temperatures, we had quite a lot of capacity.
I feel like you kind of your hand was forced into what I now consider, maybe you don't, but I consider it the hallmark of your brewery now, and that's the barrel program and the sours and the mm-hmm. You know, the wild ales that you produce. Funny enough, I never, you know, when we hang out and when I see you in my bar, you're pretty much always drinking lager, as am I.
Or gin.
yeah. Which is pretty common for brewers, but you make these unbelievably complex, fantastic, unique wild ales. I think we talked about it when we made our beer a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. how, you know, you love going straight into the wood now because it doesn't tie up the fermenter. You know, you can just, you know, send that beer straight over to a barrel, and you're however many fermenters you have, you're not tying that up for months, or, you know, in the case of our barrel, it could be a year.
That's why we're, I mean, I love making a beer with you, but also it's just such a nice way to, you know, it's sort of a win-win, because one thing is we are, we had these smaller tanks for a while, and we did lots of collaborations.
Yeah.
I mean, we still do a lot of collaborations, but we were doing all kinds of different tests and stuff on those, and we actually got rid of those, and now we have much larger tanks. So it's a little harder to do a collaboration because we end up with like 14 kegs of this beer, and so we have to, you know,
right,
somehow move
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's a little difficult. So by putting it in these barrels and barrel fermenting, it's just a nice way to do it, and the result was pretty amazing.
It was.
You have all this wine flavor, the big oak notes, and you know, it one of the disadvantages is you may not get be able to contain all the beer. You're a little bit lower in volume, but that's you know, that's fine for us. Yeah. But so we are doing a lot of the wood and barrel aged beers, whereas it, you know, we've been doing some barrel fermenting. We have just barrel aging, which is the beers are generally fermented on stainless steel and then transferred over, and then we have beers that we actually throw oak into on stainless steel. And then one time we had one barrel aging and we felt it needed some more oak flavor, so we put the oak in the barrel. But that was an extreme example.
Double oaked.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it was double oaked, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure you can make a marketing plan out of that.
That's got to be on the label. Yeah.
Before Miller steals it. Yeah. Our beer's double oaked.
Yeah,
triple hopped, double oaked.
Cold filtered. Oh, man.
How much of your production is still in the clean beers? Because, you know, you guys make a nice IPA, and the snow beer you mentioned is a whip beer. Is that still the majority of your production?
It is, yeah. I mean, we have one 7-barrel tank that is just the Brettanomyces tank. And so all the has its own hosing. We have our own bottler for it. We keep the barrels in one part of the room. So we continuously turn that tank, you know, as an all Brett beer. Sometimes we will empty it and then fill it back up on the same, with the same yeast. And, that, I guess the wild portion is probably about 20% of the total output. Barrels in general, we are doing a lot of bourbon barrel aging, and other barrels too, that I guess would be clean, you know, our clean beers. That's a pretty big chunk too. That's probably another 20% or so. Yeah. And then the week to week beers, flagships, IPA, wit beer, blonde, we make an amber with a Morton Arboretum. Those are kind of our core beers that we're always making, is probably the other half. And then there's sort of a slither of just collaborations and kind of fun sort of different series we do.
Let's talk about that Morton, the, how do you say it? Arboretum beer.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, that was sort of I'd gotten a phone call, and a friend of mine, I guess he talked to somebody over there, they were talking about maybe doing the Arboretum's talking about doing a special beer using some ingredients, and he dropped my name and information, and then I guess as soon as I got off the phone with my contact, I called the Arboretum and we had a meeting. So it was just sort of a random thing, really. Went over there thinking it'd probably be like maybe a a one-off thing for the summer or whatnot. So we're actually going to do a wit beer. And then we decided, we walked around on the grounds and started looking at the different tree species, and they were talking about their one of the biggest oak. I guess they have the most species of oak in one place and in the country. And so we got to talking about oak, and then ended up doing some test batches, and really liked the ambers, one of the test batches, and how the oak played with it and added some flavor and some color as well to it. And we went with that one for an amber ale. It was first just, we did some bottles of it for the Arboretum itself for some of the weddings and stuff. And then we came on and started selling the bottles and six packs to some of the local stores, and came on as a corporate sponsor to, you know, help raise money for the Arboretum. And
yeah, it's cool. It was a pleasant surprise. I was there for a wedding shower or something, or maybe it was a baby shower. I don't know. But, you know, it was nice to be able to drink your beer
Get drunk at the baby shower.
Well, I mean, that's, considering I can't remember what the kind of shower it was, let's assume that I invited. You guys make another fun collaboration with Superdog. And for those listening that don't know what Superdog is, it is a Chicago institution, a hot dog stand that still does car hops. So you can pull up to an intercom and order your outstanding Vienna beef hot dog, and it comes out to the car. And it's out by my house, so me and the kids go there quite often. It's nice. How'd that one come? Because they don't even have a liquor license, so they're not even selling that at Superdog, right?
Yeah, I became friends with the grandson-in-law, and he came over to the brewery a few times, and he pitched the idea to us of doing a beer that pairs with the Chicago dog. Like, what would that beer be? And so we got to think, you know, we started thinking about it, and you know, there was a few ways to go about doing it. Would we use ingredients that are actually in the Chicago dog in this beer? Would we use pickling spice or, you know, hot dog water, or, you know, God knows what, sport peppers, or would we do something complimentary and, you know, like a lager, or how about a smoked lager, or how about, you know, a Kolsch style? So anyway, so we made six different test batches on the spectrum of beers with the ingredients of the dog, and then more complimentary. And then we brought in a panel of experts to basically come to the brewery and try all these different variations with scorecards. We had focus groups, and the whole time Superdog is there with all of their Superdogs, which are actually, they're not Vienna beef, so just FYI.
Huh. Are you sure?
They make their own.
I thought Vienna made them for him, though.
My understanding is that it's made exclusively for them.
Correct.
And nobody knows who, as far as I know, nobody knows who really makes them. I don't know.
Top secret.
I don't know if it's a secret or not.
I knew it was their own blend and all that, but I thought Vienna made
it. I don't have any insider information, but I know that recipe
I'm gonna get to the bottom
or how
of
they
this.
Do it. I know it's smoked in a certain way. There's sort of a smoky flavor to it that distinguishes it. It is all beef.
Because it's not a hot dog. It's a super dog.
Yeah. can't even call it a hot dog. But anyway. It is very unique and delicious. And so basically we were eating a bunch of these super dogs, and we came on we landed on a Kolsch style recipe, and that became super beer. We did it for two other menu items, we did the Whoopski dog, which is my favorite meal there, which is like a Polish, Hungarian, Romanian type sausage. And we made like a nice sort of amber style that was malty, that that kind of fortifies those ingredients. And then the finale was our barrel-aged super shake, which is known as a pastry stout, I guess, but it does have, it's a big milk stout with chocolate and vanilla in it.
It's it's a nice beer.
Very tasty beer, yes.
Yeah, no doubt.
That sounds like the best day ever, like brewing beer and matching it with not super dogs, hot dogs and all that.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I say it was definitely, it was a very fun project, and you know, I ate a lot of super dogs and probably gained a little weight doing it, but yeah, it was very good.
Yeah,
absolutely. Mm-hmm. So you know, I've watched Lake Effect over the years go from, you know, I think the first time I visited, you were just in that first little tiny room, right? Mm-hmm. And moving the tanks around on wheels and all this.
Right.
And now you've expanded, and you know, I showed up for my collaboration last year, and you guys had gone into the next room, mm-hmm. and that was full of barrels. Now you've expanded into another room and gotten access to some more space over there. You also have a bottle shop and a little retail store selling bottles and growlers too, I think.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
What's next? What's next for Lake Effect?
Yeah, well, eventually we want to get out of the back of the alley.
It is.
We are at the end of an alley.
It's pretty cool, though. It's very unique. Like, if you go find Lake Effect, you know you are, you know, it's an adventure. And you gotta make the effort, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a happy, warm, wonderful place at the end of this. At the end of this alley, it's a little scary getting down there. We've improved the lighting.
I also like the hand. It's like a chalkboard out front that says like Lake Effect with an arrow. I mean, I like that. Yeah, it's part of the charm. Yeah. Exactly.
Yes, I mean at some point we'll get up on the street. We are working on the tap room location on the northwest side, nothing really to report about it, just kind of waiting to see what happens with this space that we're looking at. So hopefully I can make an announcement on it at some point, but it's been a lot of waiting, and there's nothing, you know, we'll see we're going to be back in the alley for a little while yet, but you know, we'll come out of it, and we'll do a tap room that features our beers, and we'll probably be doing some food trucks there, and you'll be able to come in and finally enjoy one of our beers, you know, at the place of that's made. Right now, you can kind of glance around and buy a bottle, and then we hush you out. it's one step at a time. So.
Yeah. You guys were kind of the original Northwest Side Brewery. I mean, when you guys opened, there was no one else out there. I know this because I live out there. And nothing. And now suddenly there's a few more cropping up. And do you see interest in just growing and growing out there? Because, I mean, that was a hardcore kind of old style Miller Lite neighborhood.
Yeah, it's definitely been transitioning. Definitely older Irving came in, and Eris is now, they finally got their doors open, and these are two very nice places serving really good food and excellent beers and cider now.
Very different from you guys, very similar to each other, I would say.
You know, it is welcome. I think there was a need for those types of places out near us, and I think more of that's going to continue to happen, even going further northwest. I think,
you know,
a lot of that's Irving Park, and we're like right on the border. I think Portage Park and Jefferson Park are going to start seeing seeing some action up there.
I agree. We're going to get Fishman's open soon. The bottle back shop's open. Yeah, back open. Exactly.
Yeah.
They've actually moved into Portage Park from Jefferson Park.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm out west in Portage Park. I'm still waiting for a brewery. I guess I should open it myself, but that's a lot of work.
Yeah, I mean,
I'd rather someone else do it. And then, if I open it myself, I won't want to hang out there because then I'll have to work there.
Well, you got to hire a good team that where you become obsolete, right? You just kind of walk around and,
Yeah, I think I already did that here.
You're that crazy owner guy.
Just getting people's way. That's the goal. Like,
you don't need me here anymore.
They kind of are annoyed when you show up.
Yes.
Let us do our jobs.
The eye rolls and the sighs. I do own the place.
That's when you've made it. I love the eye rolls and the
Hawaiian shirt and a captain hat.
My favorite is when I walk in, they go, "What are you doing here?" I thought I owned it. I don't know.
Oh man, that's great.
Awesome. Well, what new beers can we expect from Lake Effect?
Well, we have quite a rigorous barrel schedule for 2018. We're going to grow it much bigger this year. So we've got, we are doing a lot of interesting collaborations. Obviously the one, that we've got with you, the barrel fermented wild ale, yet to be named.
We got to get a better name.
We've got a beer with, CH Distilling. We have a Fernet barrel. We're doing a stout in, today we're actually brewing a beer.
How do you get a Fernet barrel?
Well, CH Distilling does, they make one and,
all right.
And I'm friends with one of the distillers there and he was able to get a few of the barrels out to some of the breweries. No Microphone has one. We have one, someone else, Old Irving has one and they've done some different, different types of beers on it.
What kind of beer do you have in yours?
We have our barrel aged imperial stout and with coffee, and so it's shaping up really really nicely actually, and so we have that. We have a brandy barrel aged barley wine that we're doing with Fishman's.
Oh, that sounds
so
nice.
I mashed in on that this morning, and that's being brewed as we speak. We're going to split that batch. Usually our per seven barrel batches, we can fill four 53-gallon barrels. So part of that is we have a rum barrel from Great Lakes Distillery, and then we have a rye whiskey barrel, and we have a bourbon barrel. So with the brandy barrel, it'll be split four ways, the same beer. So we'll have a really interesting way to see how each of the barrels play on that same base beer.
You got some tequila barrels?
No tequila barrels yet. We did that last year, which was real nice. We've got a bunch of gin.
I judged it at FOBAB, and
I
sent it on.
Okay, good.
You didn't win?
No,
I did my part.
FOBAB was a disaster for me. I broke my foot before it, so I didn't go.
Geez.
It was a random thing, but we have a bunch of gin barrels this year. We've been slowly collecting gin. We're up to about 10 barrels, and we are putting our Belgian white in some of them because it's a nice kind of spicy beer that will go well with the botanicals. We have a juniper saison that we make with Arboretum, and we've decided to we're going to fill two barrels with that, and that's going to be really nice. And then we've got a ginger lime saison that we're doing another one. So we're doing some light. We think of barrel age, you think of darker, big, strong styles, but we have some lighter ones that nuances the beer in different ways that are quite nice. So we have those things. We have that going on. A lot of bourbon barrel aged stout. We're going to do a coffee version this year. We're going to do another barley wine with Whiskey Acres. It's a distillery out in west of here, DeKalb area. And that's sort of a three-way collaboration with the Arboretum, because they make the bourbon for the Arboretum. So that's like a stronger version of Arbor Oak that goes
in. The Arboretum's got their own bourbon too.
Yeah, they're...
It's one rocking Arboretum. Yeah.
I like
they're like the best Arboretum.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, that I know of, at least. Party. Yeah.
More
yeah,
than
yeah.
Arboretum. Get out there. Get some drinks. Go see some trees.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We have a few other big collabs coming up. We're doing some interesting things with them too, with different wood that we're smoking the grain with. So we've got like... you know, we got hickory and oak smoked grain now that we're going to be putting in some various beers to see how the flavor takes. They gave us a bunch of tree nuts, and we're doing a nut beer, which is a total pain in the butt, cracking all those nuts. So we're probably not going to go forward with that one. But
you smoking that grain yourself?
We are, yes. We built a smoker, and it's... we have a brewery volunteer that likes to build different things, and he built a smoker. And so we text each other every day or every weekend. Okay, what are we gonna smoke this weekend? And then he's just like, "Hey, don't say that on my phone." And I'm like, so, but we're trying to different woods, and it's not because it's a neutral smoke. We've done smoking over like we did over at Hagen's Fish Market. And we've done some other
another Northwest things. Side classic, yeah. Hagen's Fish Market. Shout out to them.
I love them, and I live right by them too. And I'm always in there, and they have some of the best smoked fish. And so we smoked some grain in there, and that was nice. But some of the flavors from I think the fish and different meats and stuff might kind of you start to sense a little bit more. So the more neutral smoke, we're actually really able to distinguish the. You know, the actual flavor of that wood. And so we're kind of putting them side by side, and then we're working on a winter beer, and it will have smoke from one of those woods or maybe a combination, but we have until next winter to develop that.
So. Sort that out. That's very, yeah. It's interesting. It's, you know, it's, and in this, you know, kind of overcrowded market, having your own unique smoked malt is, I think, very beneficial, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's very interesting, you know.
That's just the ice machine, by the way, that noise that you're hearing. We're in a working restaurant.
Yeah. It's always
something.
You need noises. I like it.
Making ice.
Yeah.
cool. Well, what? Anything else you want to add here, Clint? You got... you got an open platform to promote whatever you want. I know.
Okay, you're gonna.
Yeah, I was just gonna ask if people want to kind of find your beers. Oh, what's the best way that they can do so?
Yeah, I mean, the best we're in a handful of bars and restaurants, and I would say most of them are close to the brewery. Mm-hmm. We have a website that tries to update that, but I'm the guy updating it. There might be a few places that are actually closed on that list. You know, there.
I know Pete's Pizza has it.
Yeah,
it's always a nice surprise. I got to go. You know, the kids love Pete's Pizza. You know, it's fine. It's a family restaurant.
Yeah,
but Dad can you know get down with some Lake Effect beers while the kids are having their.
I'm actually delivering a keg there today. We've got, you know, we are at Benny's and Whole Foods, so you can find us throughout the city. We're on tap often over here at Kaiser and Patty Long's. And then any kind of, you know, smaller bottle shop that is in the craft beer on the northwest side, you know, Lincoln Park, Clark Street, you know, those types of streets, you know, we are sprinkled up and down those streets. And that's kind of our distribution. And then right around the Arboretum, you can find us, like, at the Benny's and stores around there. We kind of have a cluster out there. And then there's a few other spots as well that, you know, we have like one delivery van. So we kind of target and we try and cluster our accounts. So it's kind of, if you find one account, there's probably another one within walking distance down the street. Cause that's how I do my sales.
Makes sense. Yeah.
I walk around and do sales. And,
yep.
You know, Montrose Avenue is a street I walk up and down a lot. You'll see me walking up and down Milwaukee Avenue, Lincoln Avenue, Clark. You know, those are kind of my streets.
Yeah.
Montrose is really my street. Like, I own that street. So if you find a place on Montrose that I'm not at, then let me know because I'll walk over there. But, you know, that's how we do it.
That's great.
Yeah, and I guess actually tonight, I don't know when this podcast airs. But
won't be tonight, but go ahead. Yeah.
at Beer on the Wall, we do have a keg of Super Shake, barrel-aged Super Shake over there. That's in Park Ridge. So that's where I'll be later tonight.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
Northwest side. I love it.
Pretty much.
And then if people want to visit you, the bottle shop and other things, they can... Yeah,
we're open every day but Sunday, and Saturday is probably the best day to visit us. And we're always coming out. We always have freshly bottled, canned beers, usually Thursday and Friday. So by the time you come in the weekend, we always have something new for you.
And correct me if I'm wrong, address is 4727 West Montrose?
It is, yeah. Okay. And there's a costume shop.
Yeah.
We are located in the back of that costume shop, down the alley.
Follow the chalkboard.
There's a little building in the back, and that's where you'll find our bottle shop. So you'll walk in the brewery and you'll see this display cooler, and that's my bottle shop, which is you have no idea how much trouble I went to get that cooler, like the license for that cooler. But but yeah, that's it there, and we do tours on Saturdays, and
is it first come
show you around.
First come, first serve for the tours, or online buy, or
yeah, we have you sign up online. Okay. But if you walked in, we give you a tour. It includes you get a pint glass out of it. It's like $5 and we show you around.
Cool.
Yep.
Awesome. Clint, thank you very much for coming out here. I really appreciate it. Bruce, what do you got anything going on?
We're touring, even with the blizzard. I have to call the two people signed up tomorrow and see if they really want to go. But we will if they do. And then, you know, we're rocking and rolling. So March coming up is when the full schedule starts to open up. So
cool.
Yeah. How about you?
What's going on? Patty Long's has some events. We are hosting Second Shift. I'd made a collaboration beer with them, which actually ended up being two kind of collaboration beers. We're supposed to make a Hefeweizen, but the yeast didn't show up in time. Mm. So we made a pale ale, and then the yeast showed up the next day. And on my drive back to Chicago, he's like, "I'm making that Hefeweizen." So we'll have both of those beers.
Just like that.
Yeah, just that's exactly how it went down. And what is that? That is Wednesday, February 14th at Patty Long's, and the owners and, you know, Steve, the brewmaster, will be there, and we'll be pounding some beers. But, yeah, other than that, you know, it's business as usual here at Kaiser.
Okay.
You know?
A little curling? A
lot of curling.
Yeah.
A lot of curling going on, the Olympics. We were supposed to be on NBC Nightly News last night. We got bumped.
Oh.
We got bumped by a story about a Down syndrome baby. Yeah. So, you know, it was funny. I got a text from my mom, you know, that everyone's cringing that I'm telling the story. But you should be cringing. I got a text from my mom that was like, "Oh, that's a bummer. But, you know, you should feel good about getting bounced, but, you know, getting bumped by a story about a Down syndrome baby." And then right after, my phone went off, and it was my business partner, Chris, and it just said, "We got bumped for that stupid baby." So, the point of the story is my mom's a wonderful person, and my business partner is not so much. He's a terrible person. Thankfully, he doesn't listen to this podcast, so we can say anything we want about him. On that note,
man.
I want to thank everyone for listening. Remember, we're at beeropinions.com. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us wherever you found us, because obviously you found us if you're listening to this.
Hello to it.
And hello, of course, to Bruce's dad.
All right.
Till next time. Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.